Who of us wants the situation in our world to improve, for things to get better? I imagine all of us. I imagine all of our hands would be in the air. And not just for 2020, but at any time, who of us wouldn't want things to get better? But then, another follow-up question, who of us likes change? Yeah. A lot of the hands would probably start coming down. Even when things aren't ideal, it's hard to change. We're creatures of comfort. We get used to how things are. And we could even prefer a non-ideal situation to having to change the way I do things. It's hard to internalize a change. But wherever we look around us, things are always changing. People are changing. Leaders and offices are changing. Our bodies change. Buildings crumble and change. Even if you're watching on Facebook today, the format of Facebook changed recently, and you're probably like, oh, why did they have to change it? I was just getting used to it. Things all around us change, but we can have a lot of resistance to it. Yeah, it's part of our human condition. It's something that we actually can't escape, that we have to recognize. And even thousands of years ago, it was recognized that everything changes, or almost everything. If you ever took an ancient philosophy course, you may remember the pre-Socratics, those earliest philosophers who came before Socrates. They were trying to understand the world around them. And one of them, named Heraclitus, he was famous for saying, the only thing constant is change. And he had this image of a river. And he said, can a man step in the same river twice? Heraclitus would say, no. Because when he steps in the second time, the river has changed and the man has changed. That everything seems to be changing in our world. It's part of our human condition. But then the philosophers that would follow these pre-Socratics, Heraclitus, Parmenides, and the like, they began to understand that there has to be something that doesn't change. Plato and Aristotle, they started thinking about this. And they discovered and posited that maybe there is one thing that doesn't change, and we have to call that divine in a certain sense. And these still pagan philosophers, you know, not in our Judeo-Christian mindset. And Aristotle would say, that one thing that doesn't change, I'm going to call that the unmoved mover. Because everything's moving, everything's in flux, everything's changing. But there has to be something, if we back all the way up, that gets all of that going. And he'd call that the unmoved mover. Something that had to push everything into motion. I like watching sometimes on YouTube these chain reactions. Maybe they go for like 10 minutes. You know, someone shoots a basketball, and then it goes down the chute, and then knocks a lever, and then it sets a ping pong ball down this winding path, and then it sets some dominoes. There had to be someone to make that first shot, to make that first move, to get everything else in motion and change. And Aristotle would call this the unmoved mover. That thing has to be steady, constant, secure, eternal. Otherwise, it wouldn't be unmoved. There had to be something before that. And then in the church, as we understood the world around us with the light of Revelation, and even looking at the Greek philosophers and others, St. Thomas Aquinas would pick up this same thing from Aristotle and say, we call that unmoved mover God. because of the light of revelation, we can actually use these reasonable accounts and take it a little further. And Thomas Aquinas would use Aristotle's arguments in his five proofs for the existence of God, recognizing that everything in the world changes, everything's in flux, everything's in motion, except one thing, God. And we can actually have contact with God. We can have contact with that thing that does not change. We actually grasp for it. We try to cling to it when things around us are spinning. Even in the opening prayer for the Mass today, I prayed, "Grant, O God, that amid the uncertainties of this world, all the things changing, our hearts may be fixed on that place where true gladness is found." We long for something secure. We long for something fixed. And we can actually begin to taste it even in the world that we experience now, by reaching out to God, reaching out to the thing that is divine and unlike us. We hear in the readings today of how we can reach out to that through two particular persons, Eliakim and Peter. They're very similar characters, one in the prophet Isaiah and one in the Gospel of Matthew. A lot of similarities between these two figures, and each of them called fixed, secure, because of their contact with the Almighty. Eliakim, God says of him, "I will fix him like a peg in a sure spot." He was the second in command, given this office under the king. He was the king's prime minister, his number two in command. And the Lord said of him, "I will fix him like a peg. He will not move." He'll actually participate in a certain way with that thing that is unchanging, the divine. And then Peter images this for us as well. When Peter recognizes Christ, Jesus, as the Son of God, Jesus says to him, "You are Peter," giving him a new name, a name that means rock. "You are rock, and on you I will build my church, and the gates of the netherworld shall not prevail against it." He calls Peter into this special relationship, a fixed relationship upon which people can build and find steadiness and security. And to both of these figures, too, is given a gift, the same gift, keys. Eliakim, the Lord said, "I will place the key of the house of David on Eliakim's shoulder. When he opens, no one shall shut. When he shuts, no one shall open." And the same with Peter. Jesus says to him, "I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." They're given this special gift to unlock for the world that place of security, that place where things don't change, that place where I prayed in the opening prayer, where true gladness is found. Eliakim and Peter, these prime ministers, second in command, they're given this task to unlock the mysteries of God and to unlock this place of steadiness and security. Now, were they perfect? No. Eliakim and Peter, both of them had their faults. Both of them made bad decisions. But when they participated with the divine, when they stood in the place of authority God had given them, they were that place of security. They were that rock, that fixed peg. You see the keys of Peter all around our church. They're here in the symbols of Peter as the first of the apostles. They're on the Vatican flag in our gathering space and out on Matamidi Avenue. this symbol of security, the keys to the kingdom, they point to us the place where we can find comfort, where we can find true gladness. And of course, the papacy was set into motion with Peter, the first pope. After him would come Linus, and then Cletus, and then Clement, and then Sixtus, all the way to Pope Francis. And we can keep reaching out to that security that God has for us in the Holy Catholic Church. Now, do our leaders make mistakes? Sure they do. Even the Pope can make mistakes. Of course, he speaks infallibly when he speaks of faith and morals, but this doesn't make him infallible in every decision. Even next week, we'll get the second part of the gospel from today. Jesus calls Peter rock today. He calls him Satan next week. That's a big change. They can make bad calls. They can say things that don't make much sense. But still, the Lord ordains to give his authority to human persons that we would be able to touch the divine, that they would be able to unlock for us that place where true gladness is found. So brothers and sisters, in our changing world, as things spin around us, let's cling to the divine. Let's cling to that faith that does not change. The Father who loves us and who gives us himself.